This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. Canaccord are an award-winning wealth and investment managers who go above and beyond to support your financial decision-making. Visit candowealth.com to start building your portfolio with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. On Sunday, Tory activists and MPs alike will descend on Conservative Party conference, and in the build-up, we are facing a fuel crisis and a labour shortage crisis. Today, the Business Secretary, Kwasi Kwarteng, has given an interview where he has hit at employers seeking to keep wages down through the use of cheap immigrant labour. Fraser, in his interview with Conservative Home, it touches on something you write about in your Telegraph column today. What is this new argument we're hearing from ministers?
Right now, we're in a crisis which has got its uses for the Conservatives, and there's a power struggle at the heart of this crisis. The businesses and the CBI are saying to the government, look, you need to let in more migrant labour. We cannot fill this gap. There are tens of thousands of vacancies for truck drivers. There are 16,000 vacancies in meat processing. You need to let in more migrant labour. To which the government is responding, no, you guys need to pay more money. It's not that Brits don't want the job, it's that they don't want the job right now at the very low salary levels you're advertising them. And now this comes down to one of the arguments about Brexit. It was argued by those who wanted to leave that the EU was keeping low wages down. Not so much the minimum wage, but say if you're a skilled labourer, if you're an electrician, if you're a sous chef, if you're a driver, then you what was once a well-paid job in comparative to other jobs had become less so. And that was because of all the competition from EU workers. If that were reduced, then the wages would go up. Nonsense, the Remain campaign said, immigration doesn't cut wages. We're now at a situation which is quite important for Brexiteers because they see the vindication of their original argument that when immigrant labour dries up, as it currently did after the pandemic, then you will see wages rise. Waitrose, for example, is now offering £1,750 a week for a new driver. Now, that's more than your average backbench MP gets. It's three times more than the average driver was getting only a few months ago. So Tories see in this something going badly right. Yes, there was a labour crisis. Yes, there's a huge worker shortage. But that means big salary increases for the sort of people who are now rare. This flips power from the bosses to the workers. And the Tories are on the side of the workers. The ironic thing is that Keir Starmer said in the Labour Party conference a few days ago that he would let 100,000 immigrants coming in to relieve the pressure on drivers. That will be cast by the Tories as the pro-business, in other words, the pro-bosses side of the argument, where they are the new workers' party. So you're seeing in the middle of this crisis a fascinating new dividing line. The Tories saying, no, this is a good crisis. We're not going to give you more migrants. We want you to pay more instead. And Labour is saying, this is bad for the economy. We need to increase immigration and solve it that way, just like Tony Blair did.
James, the Tories may think this is a good crisis, but it's still a crisis in the immediate terms, in terms of how it affects people. We've seen fuel supply chains, warnings that we won't be able to get pigs and blankets at Christmas. So is it going to be a painful transition if the government do go down this route, even if the end result is something they can sell?
Up to now, we've seen a kind of game of chicken going on between the government and business groups. Business group says, we need more visas to and because we need to bring in more immigrant labour. Government saying, well, pay people more. And, it, you know, standoff goes on HGV drivers. The government ended up issuing 5,000 extra visas in the end. I think the challenge for the government is, this is a transition, but I don't think you can expect to do the transition all at once. And so I think what the government will need to do is to kind of box clever and issue a certain number of visas, but also say to the industries, wages have to rise at the same time. Because I think otherwise, you are going to end up with supply chain shortages, and that is going to have a real knock-on effect on growth. You know, the Bank of England have already moved back by 2 months, or by up to 2 months, the moment in which the economy will recover to its pre-COVID size, because of these supply chain shortages and blockages. So I think you can't expect you're going to do everything at once. You've got to find a way for the two things to go hand in hand. So yes, if you are raising wages, you're looking to train up more staff. we are more open to, the government should be saying, we are more open to your calls for more visas. Because essentially everything in modern life comes at least the last bit of a journey by lorry. And the moment the shortage of the number of lorry drivers is greater than the number that you can expect to rapidly train up, whatever level of salary you're offering. As Fraser said, you've now got firms offering equivalent of an annual salary of £78,000-£81,000, right? When you consider that the average salary these people were being paid was about £23,000-£24,000 previously. I think that whatever the salary went up to at the moment, there are enough people to do the jobs, qualified to do jobs at the moment. So it's about managing this transition.
Fraser, do you agree with that? That there can be some short-term moves by the government to ease the process?
James is talking the language of compromise. He may well be right, but right now the Tories aren't really in a mood to compromise. It's funny, people think of the Tories as being the party of business, but there is an element of the Brexit agenda where business is basically not quite seen as the enemy, but almost. The CBI was the bête noire of the Leave campaign, and they've thought that the EU suited employers and didn't really suit the workers. It's odd to see Tories come down on this side, but right now they feel that this is almost a good war worth fighting. James raises the prospect here, well, they're not going to think that if they see inflation soaring, they're not going to think that if it stops economic growth. And let's remember the last economic growth figures did show the economy flattening when it should have been growing. And then there's the Let's Save Christmas agenda. Are we going to have shortages right up until Christmas Day with empty shelves? And what will people think of the Tories then? But let's have a look at the opinion polls. I mean, right now, there's a significant Tory bump, perhaps after the Labour Party conference. But if you're Boris Johnson, you're not really feeling in the mood for compromising right now. You're thinking, no, let's let them sweat, because we need business to get the message that the era of high immigration is not coming back. Therefore, they should be investing in automation, in more machinery, and they should be making permanently higher salaries. You can see a little bit of this now. Care homes, for example, are paying golden hellos of £100, sometimes £500. They didn't used to do that. But there's still, these golden hellos still end up with the ridiculously lowly paid jobs and the minimum wage of £9.81 an hour. Now, care home worker is a skilled job. And this is my own little test of whether the economy is being fixed or not. For as long as care home workers are being paid the minimum wage, then there'll be a deep dysfunction in this economy. Looking after old people is one of the most important things that we can do. And it's high time that not just the care home sector, but the meat processing industry and other industries did wean themselves off the endless pool of cheap labour and made the investment required for a different economic model. When, Dominic Raab's interview with The Spectator this week, he made the same sort of noise. Kwasi Kwarteng is saying the same thing to Conservative Home. This is the mood the Tories are in. Now, but they may have to compromise in the way James says, but right now they fight on.
James, looking ahead to Tory conference, which kicks off on Sunday, and has several spectator events that we will make sure to plug at the end of this podcast, so do stay on. What are the main themes? What is the mood of the party? As Fraser touches on, the Tories are riding fairly high in the polls, even if there is quite a lot of chaos around.
I think the odd thing is, if you'd said to people, oh, this would be the first gathering of the Tory tribe after they won their biggest majority in 30-odd years, they're 8 points ahead in the latest YouGov poll, you would have thought this would be the kind of event that would put some pressure on the champagne supply chain. But I think the Tories go to Manchester in relatively muted mood. And there's two reasons for that. One is what is going on out in the country. I think it would be a bad look to be in kind of celebratory black back-slapping state while voters are kind of queuing up for petrol. And the second is, I think the Tory party is having something of an identity crisis. In 2019, it knew what it was for. It was for getting Brexit done and stopping Jeremy Corbyn. It is less sure what it is for now. Now, Number 10 say, no, the new mission is levelling up. That's what defines us. I mean, the problem is that lots of Tories aren't quite sure that they know what levelling up means, or they fear that levelling up means, taxing the South more to spend more in the North. For decades now, the conference hall has been a very tame affair at Tory conference. But the fringe, I think, and in the bars, that will be the kind of the undercurrent of discussion. I think, one person who isn't suffering from any existential angst is Boris Johnson. I think he's very happy with his, more go-list turn in the Tory party. But I think there will be a lot of people wondering about, okay, I could just about live with that increase in national insurance, but there aren't any more tax rises coming. Kind of slightly nervous question, I think, will be asked by a lot of people.
And finally, Fraser, when it comes to the other big story in the news, which is the Met Police in the wake of the verdict and sentencing involving the murder of Sarah Everard, Cressida Dick is under further pressures today. Do we think that she will resign? Is this a moving story, or is it just more people saying something that's not going to happen?
She was reappointed fairly recently, and at a time where it was pretty clear what the dynamics of Sarah Everard's story were going to be. Now that they've come out, I don't think there's any particularly new information here. So the government had thought that when the detail of the Everard case would make her job inviable, it wouldn't have reappointed her. The funny thing about Cressida Dick is that any commissioner of the Metropolitan Police gets calls for the resignation when things go wrong, as they tend to do with the police. If there were better options than her, I think the government would have taken them by now. It's not that they're wildly enthusiastic about her, they're not, but they can't think of any other better options. Now, this itself is a bit of a problem. You'd like to think that there were lots of good, competent candidates running for commissioner of the Met, but unfortunately for the government, they're not. Cressida Dick has been through a lot bigger scraps than this. It is quite depressing that she's having to almost say to people that your average Londoner cannot trust the average policeman. You'd think the commissioner of the Met would be saying the reverse. So I wouldn't say that she's emerged brilliantly from this by any means. But if there was an alternative, then that alternative would be sitting right now in New Scotland Yard.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And while I have the editor here, we're going to talk you through our conference events programme. Fraser, what are the highlights that are reaching out to you, other than the free gin and tonics, which I think you get at every event, even if we're not supposed to?
For those who are coming to the political equivalent of the Glastonbury Festival, we're going to have a spectator event and we're going to be serving gin to everyone. We did have a debate as to whether 10:30 is too early for gin. There is such a thing as gin o'clock. When's your gin o'clock, Katie?
I think it's 10:45 on Tuesday, October 5th, watching you in conversation with Dominic Raab.
Well, that's going to be the first one. We are going to be serving gin if anybody wants to come there. And then we're going to be doing a live podcast of Coffee House Shots.
We also have Taxing Times, How to Pay for Levelling Up on Monday. That's early in the evening, and that's with...
We've got Jesse Norman, the former Treasury Minister, on that panel. I mean, I think this is a very interesting question, which is, how to run a more efficient tax system. Jacob Rees-Mogg's already been out pre-conference today making clear in the Daily Telegraph, it doesn't mean that taxes can go any higher. And I think it's an interesting question, is there a way to generate more revenue without raising taxes yet further?
So if you'd like to read all about these events, go to www.spectator.co.uk/conference-events and you can buy a ticket there, very reasonably priced. Now, you can get into the event should the space allow without buying a ticket, but if you do, you not only get complimentary chocolates, special spectator chocolates, your money also goes to a charity.
Yes, the charity that we're supporting, we're going to be giving all the ticket money to, is Caritas Salford Refugee Support Centre. It's a pretty incredible charity. Our colleague John Connolly used to work there, where it will help refugees and every weekday night help them learn English, help them settle down, give them counselling and advice. It's the kind of social enterprise that will do its best to settle the tens of thousands of people in this country who have been given leave to remain, but do need quite a lot of help in making the best of their opportunities here. One of the things about the Tory party right now is you can look on its front benches and see quite a few children of refugees and migrants. Dominic Raab, the Deputy Prime Minister, Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, are both the children of refugees. And some of the best stories of British public life are refugee stories. So we figured that this charity, which does so much to promote and help settle those who need it, should be the charity that we support this year. And you can find out more about them by going on the Spectator website, spectator.co.uk/Caritas.
And with that, he managed to stay on as we went for our entire program.
Do you think anybody has?
You're welcome, Molly Paul Roger, to have really made it to the end.
Yeah. Thank you for staying with us.